Hello and welcome to Volume 46, Number 5 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 30th of January 2026. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Andrew and Alison. And in the news, erosion help is announced, jail for inter-resort drug traffickers, and we now have the last wooden scenic railway operating in Britain. No birthdays to report this week. We do, however, have the February programme for Vision Norfolk in Grapevine Extra. OK, the first part of the news coming shortly. But first, whilst we don't normally greet new listeners, as often it's uncertain when people actually receive their players, I have to make an exception this week. Now, I take great pride in having been the first voice on Volume 1, Number 1 of Grapevine, some 46 years ago. But the listener we're welcoming today was a close second. Take a listen.
Hello everybody from the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association for the Blind. Welcome to this, the first of our weekly talking newspapers, Grapevine. Yes, every week from now on you'll be receiving through your letterbox a cassette like this, which we hope you'll look forward to and enjoy. To tell you more about this, here is our chairman, Mr. Rex Steadman.
Hello. I really am very pleased to be talking to you today. After many months of work, we are now able to present our first issue of Grapevine. This would not have been possible without the help of a large number of people and organisations. We have an army of volunteers, and financial assistance has been received from so many different sources. Since last August, we've raised thousands of pounds to buy high-speed copiers, erasers, cassette recorders, cassettes, and other items of equipment. We are very grateful to all those who have helped for enabling us to bring Grapevine into your homes. Don't forget, Grapevine is your own personal newspaper, and we hope you get as much pleasure from listening to it as we do from preparing it. Best wishes from all of us at Grapevine.
Yes, we welcome Grapevine's past chairman and long-term member, Rex, as our latest listener. The team at Grapevine send their best wishes to you, Rex, as you sit, hopefully comfortably, the other side of the microphone. Right, time to get down to business for approximately the 2,340th time, as Andrew and Alison bring us the first part of this week's local news.
Well, hello and welcome to Grapevine. Andrew and Alison with you again. Alison's going to start us off with the news today. Coastal erosion, I think, Alison.
Hello, everyone. A plea has been made for help for people whose lives are being destroyed by the rapid erosion of parts of Norfolk's coastline, as council has warned of death by quango. The plight of people in Hemsby, which recently lost 10 metres of cliff in one night, putting 18 homes at risk, sparked Norfolk County Council to unanimously agree to demand further action from the government. Conservative leaders directed much of their ire at the Environment Agency, the quango supposed to protect and improve the environment. Conservative Councillor Graham Plant, who proposed the motion calling on the council to write to the government demanding urgent action, said, "We're being quangoed to death. Nothing is being done by the Environment Agency, except for managed retreat, and I think that's an absolute disgrace." His motion called for Emma Reynolds, Secretary of State for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, to immediately review coastal erosion and flooding funding formulas. It also calls for the Environment Agency to update the shoreline management plan for Hemsby and Great Yarmouth, which Mr. Plant says dates to 2012 and relies on data from 2005. It also called for ring-fenced funding and for a fair compensation and relocation framework for people whose homes have been lost to the sea. James Bensley, Conservative County Councillor for East Fleg Division, which includes Hemsby, said, "Norfolk is on the front line of coastal change, yet coastal communities like Hemsby continue to be treated as afterthoughts in national policy. Hemsby is not just a postcode on a map. It is families, small businesses, seasonal workers, visitors and generations of memories built along a coastline that is now disappearing at a terrifying rate." The Greens tabled an amendment to the motion, which would have committed the authority to declaring a climate emergency. Green, Ben Price, said, "Storms are more intense. Sea levels are rising. Erosion is accelerating well beyond previous projections. Treating this as business as usual simply does not match the reality on the ground. That is why declaring a climate emergency matters." However, that amendment was lost, with leader Kay Mason Billig saying, "We don't declare emergencies in this chamber. We think action speaks louder than words." All 55 councillors backed the motion.
And following on from that motion, which obviously must have had an effect in Whitehall, because a major funding boost, which could offer a glimmer of hope for Norfolk villages, has been announced. The Environment Agency has announced that £18 million will be shared between Norfolk, Suffolk and the East Riding of Yorkshire to support long-term coastal adaptation projects. The money will fund pilot schemes, including selective property purchases and new financing solutions in areas where homes face imminent risk from erosion. Local leaders, of course, have welcomed the announcement, describing it as a rare moment of optimism. Carl Smith, leader of Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said, "Our borough, particularly at Hemsby, continues to see the devastating impact that coastal erosion has on the lives of our residents. The announcement of this additional funding to support continued innovative solutions around how we help communities adapt to our rapidly changing coastline is welcome recognition that coastal erosion is something that needs to be addressed urgently at a national level. The urgency of the situation has been stark this winter. Earlier in the month, more than 10 metres of land were lost to the sea at Hemsby in a single night, and contractors have been demolishing 23 houses built on the fragile dunes. Further up the coast at Haysborough, people have been warned about the risks of the cliff collapse after about 100 metres of land was lost to the sea in parts of the village in a recent 20-year period. Councillor Harry Blathwaite, Cabinet Member and Portfolio Holder for Coast North Norfolk District Council, said he was delighted at the authority's Coastwise programme that will continue thanks to the new funding. Coastwise is a government-funded scheme aimed at getting coastal communities ready for climate change. This week, North Norfolk District Council is starting work on building a replacement car park in Haysborough, marking the second time in 15 years that the facility has had to retreat inland. These are challenging times for coastal communities across the UK, but this investment will deliver a message of hope about the future, he said. England's coastline is under increasing pressure, with sea levels projected to rise significantly over the coming decades. The Environment Agency's recent National Coastal Erosion Risk Map indicates around 20,000 properties could be at risk from coastal change by 2105. The new pilot projects will be managed by the Environment Agency and are expected to begin in April 2026. The Environment Agency's chair, Alan Lovell, said, "England has seen some of the fastest eroding coastline in Europe, and climate change is accelerating these pressures. Through the coastal adaptation pilots, we are supporting coastal communities to plan ahead and prepare for a safer and more resilient future." Floods Minister Emma Hardy said, "Coastal erosion is one of the most challenging impacts of climate change, and we will always support our towns to adapt where the forces of nature make long-term defence impossible." As things stand, the government does not currently offer compensation to victims of coastal erosion. Instead, affected residents may be eligible for the Coastal Erosion Assistance Grant, which provides up to £6,000 per property towards demolition and relocation costs. Last week, Great Yarmouth Conservatives brought forward a motion calling on the government to improve their financial support, as we just heard earlier in the news. They did say that current funding arrangements are failing to keep pace with the scale of the problem. Well, that's very welcome news for everybody in our area, in the communities. Let's hope we do actually see this money forthcoming.
The UK has signed a clean energy pact with 9 European countries to build a new unprecedented fleet of joint offshore wind farms in the North Sea. The Hamburg Declaration, signed with nations including Germany, Norway, France and Denmark, pledges to deliver 100 gigawatts of offshore wind power through projects with shared planning and grid connections. The government said it will accelerate plans to transform the North Sea into the world's largest clean energy reservoir to help the UK and Europe escape the fossil fuel roller coaster through clean, secure energy. It is part of a wider strategy set 3 years ago to build 300 gigawatts of offshore wind in the North Sea by 2050, as Europe tries to end its reliance on imported gas in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and Putin's weaponisation of energy supplies. Kevin Keeble, chairman of the East of England Energy Group, the EEEGR, hailed the deal a winning proposition for the people and companies of the East of England. He added, "We are world leaders in wind farm design, engineering, installation, maintenance and operations. 100 gigawatts is enough electricity to power over 143 million homes. The interconnectors associated with this project can help to balance out demands among the European neighbours involved." Mr. Keeble said while gas will continue to be a fuel for power and heating in the UK for decades to come, the agreed project will strengthen the country's energy security and future-proof its energy needs. "The demand for electrical energy is not diminishing," he said. "The more we can generate from renewable sources, the better." Earlier this month, the government announced its largest ever expansion of offshore wind farms in the UK, awarding subsidy contracts to developers for projects with a capacity of 8.4 gigawatts, enough to power more than 12 million homes. More than a third of the UK's total capacity has been handed to German energy company RWE's Vanguard East and West wind farm projects, located 50 to 80 kilometres off the coast of Norfolk. Once operational, the two wind farms will generate enough electricity to power around 3 million homes.
And moving inland now, major works to resurface 4 key roads in Acle Village have been postponed until the summer. Norfolk County Council's £240,000 scheme to resurface South Walsham Road and 3 other roads in the village has now been postponed. The work had been due to start on January the 27th to resurface a number of roads in Acle, including South Walsham Road, Bridewell Lane, The Street and Old Road. Norfolk County Council said in a letter, "We're writing to inform you that the scheme to resurface South Walsham Road and various other roads in Acle has been deferred to the next financial year, starting 26-27. The works are now intended to be carried out during daytime hours over the next summer holidays. This decision has been made due to ongoing emergency works being undertaken by Anglian Water on the B1140 Panksworth Road, which lies within our planned diversion route. This reduced our delivery window, preventing us from carrying out the planned works. We sincerely apologise for any inconvenience this delay may cause and appreciate that changes to timelines can be disruptive. We will provide updates on the dates and times of the works closer to the scheduled period. When the work begins, the County Council expects it to take 11 nights to complete." Workers from Norfolk County Council's Infrastructure Department and its contractors will work overnight from 7pm to 6am to reduce local traffic disruption. The County Council assures that access to properties within the road closure will be maintained, but there may be periods when access will be restricted. On-street parking within the road closure will be blocked during working hours.
A council has expressed interest in managing a proposed country park, community building and car park, linked to controversial plans for 100 new homes in Acle Village. The facilities form part of a wider development at Leffins Lane in Acle, which also includes plans for 90 retirement apartments. At a meeting of Acle Parish Council last month, a planning officer from Broadland District Council confirmed that the proposed community building and associated 50-space car park would be offered as land only, with no building or parking infrastructure provided. Minutes of the meeting show parish councillors expressed some interest in taking on the site if the requirement to construct the community building was removed. Councillors also said they may be interested in taking ownership and management of the proposed country park, subject to a reduced sum, which would give the parish greater control over the land. The meeting also heard that councillors would consider taking on the new play park, provided there were no services beneath the site. Acle Parish Council has been contacted for comment. Plans for the Leffens Lane development were approved by Broadland District Council in October, but the decision proved controversial after councillors made a dramatic U-turn. Broadland's planning committee had twice rejected proposals from Crocus Homes to develop around 50 acres of farmland, including housing, apartments, a country park and a car park. However, following intervention from the council's monitoring officer, Emma Hodds, councillors reversed their decision and approved the scheme. At the time, councillor Jimmy Lee, who represents Acle, accused Ms Hodds of overstepping her role and has called for an independent investigation into what he described as improper involvement in the decision-making process.
Boaters in the Norfolk Broads area fear someone could get seriously hurt or be killed due to a lack of facilities at a key site. The Broads Authority, the BA, have warned that limited places for sailors to stop to demast at Breydon Water are posing a serious safety issue. Sailors need to drop their masts at the Great Yarmouth end of Breydon so that they can pass under Breydon Bridge and other crossings on the River Bure as it passes through the town. The large sheltered estuary is a junction for three major rivers, with the Yare and the Waveney flowing in at the western end and the Bure joining just after it ends at Breydon Bridge on the edge of Yarmouth. It offers by far the most challenging conditions on the Broads, with strong tides which expose vast mudflats along the edges and no suitable bank on which to moor. At a recent Navigation Committee meeting, Bob Neat said he had heard of several incidents that, quote, could have resulted in death, from people falling in while trying to drop their masts in challenging conditions. The BA has installed dolphin demasting pontoons, but Mr Neat said these are not fit for purpose, and he has instead urged officials to consider creating a demasting pontoon. However, John Packman, chief executive of the BA, has warned installing any new pontoons would be, quote, a big piece of work due to the strict environmental restrictions in place at Breydon. Dan Hoare, head of operations, urged anyone witnessing a near-missed incident at Breydon Water to report it to the BA. The Nature Reserve is designated as a special site of scientific interest due to its importance as a wetland habitat. In the winter months, it is home to tens of thousands of wading birds, such as golden plovers, lapwings and Bewick swans. Breydon Water is one of the key areas that the Broads Rangers patrol, particularly during the busy summer period.
7 years and almost 300 documents later, a major housing scheme for 93 new homes in a seaside village has finally cleared its last planning hurdle. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has confirmed planning officers can now issue formal approval for Orbit Housing's development on land east of Yarmouth Road in Hemsby. The site was granted outline planning permission in 2018, despite concerns over pressure on local services and the impact on a nearby residential care home. A detailed reserved matters application covering appearance, landscaping, layout and scale followed in 2021. However, the scheme then fell into limbo for several years as the application underwent multiple revisions, generating more than 267 separate planning documents. In October 2024, Orbit Housing bought the site from Allison Homes and later submitted revised reserved matters plans. In December, the Borough Council's Development Management Committee backed the application, subject to a series of conditions, including payment of an £18,057 tariff for environmental mitigation and approval from Natural England. Both requirements have since been met, with Natural England raising no objections and the mitigation fee paid in early January. The approved plans will see all 93 homes delivered as affordable housing, including 56 for social rent and 37 for shared ownership. The development will include a mix of 1 to 4 bedroomed houses and bungalows, all fitted with electric vehicle charging points and heated by air source heat pumps. Plans also include the planting of 52 new trees and the creation of 2 public open space areas. The scheme faced 13 objections from residents, raising concerns about infrastructure and increased traffic. Hemsley Parish Council said it recognised the need for affordable housing, but had, quote, significant concerns about the infrastructure provision and missed opportunities within the plans. The council added, as the development does not include on-site play provision, we formally request a ring-fenced financial contribution towards improvements to Hemsby playing field.
And staying with housing, mystery surrounds a proposed housing development in the Broads, with some claiming it could more than double a riverside village's population. Housing giant Taylor Wimpey has confirmed it has met members of Cantley Parish Council to discuss plans to build homes on land next to Peregrine Close on Station Road in the village. The Parish Council said the proposal is for 300 houses, a number which would more than double the size of the village. Cantley currently has a population of around 511 people and, of course, is best known for the sugar factory there. The developer, however, has not confirmed how many houses will be built or drawn up a timeline for the consultation and planning application. A spokesman for Taylor Wimpey said, "We have recently met with the Parish Council to understand their approach to the potential development of land in Cantley. We are in the early stages of determining the viability of the site and will continue to work closely with the relevant stakeholders. The proposal will be discussed at a public meeting organised by Cantley, Limpenhoe and Southwold Parish Council at Cantley Village Hall today, Thursday the 29th of January. The event will be an opportunity for villagers and parishioners to hear about the Parish Council's decision to prepare a neighbourhood plan." It said this was necessary due to Taylor Wimpey's scheme. The Parish Council added, "Whilst we cannot stop the development, we can help to shape what is delivered in terms of housing stock, housing design, infrastructure and the protection of valuable vistas and assets in the village." They are urging villagers to attend the meeting as the proposed development would have, quote, a significant impact on the parish and surrounding settlements. Ahead of the meeting, one villager said, "Clearly the feeling is that doubling the size of the village population, which currently has no amenities such as a doctor's, shops, or since its recent closure, even a primary school, is crazy."
An MP's pothole reporting service has triggered a war of words with council leaders, who say it is slowing down getting them fixed. Great Yarmouth Independent MP Rupert Lowe set up his service earlier this month, urging people in his constituency to report potholes directly to him via his website. Mr Lowe said he would take up people's pothole problems with Norfolk County Council and would chase them until they were fixed. But at a meeting of the Conservative-led council on Tuesday, senior councillors criticised his approach, saying people would be better off reporting potholes via the authority's own website. Graham Plant, the council's cabinet member for highways, transport and infrastructure, said, "It is unfortunate when somebody sets up a new scheme to report potholes, which doesn't marry up with ours, because it doesn't give an exact place where that pothole is. It also takes resources away from our teams to go back to them to ask the questions. We have an MP who has set up his own pothole reporting scheme, but unfortunately it does not have as much detail as is needed, such as we have on our website. So basically it is slowing everything down to try and get the potholes fixed, because we have to go back to find out exactly where they are and ask for more information. We've had 70 of those so far. but Mr. Lowe dismissed Mr. Plant's remarks as total nonsense and said he had no intention of dropping his scheme. He said, "We receive so many complaints about potholes not being sorted by the council in a reasonable time frame. We set up this scheme so we can chase them down when they're not delivering. I am doing this so it saves our residents time and effort, making the reporting process as easy as possible. It enables us to ensure that the council is delivering for residents. Obviously, they don't like that. These councillors should remember who they are working for, residents and taxpayers. We are going to continue our scheme, and there has been success already."
A cancer patient has spoken out about what she describes as a shameful parking system at the James Paget Hospital. Sarah McGinn, who's 59, says that vulnerable patients at the hospital in Goulston are being trapped in overcrowded car parks and penalised for circumstances beyond their control. Last summer, the hospital transformed its parking system, removing barriers and bringing in automatic number plate recognition, ANPR as it's known. At the time, bosses said it would make entry and exit quicker and easier. But Miss McGinn, who lives in Halesworth, said that is when the problems began. She said there is no warning to drivers that the car park is full to overflowing. The result is that patients are stuck in a slow queue of barely moving vehicles, unable to exit or park. Miss McGinn, who is being monitored as a melanoma patient, said her first experience of the system came last November. She was scheduled to attend a dermatology appointment, accompanied by her husband, who is undergoing treatment for brain cancer. She said they entered the car park unaware it was full and became trapped for around 40 minutes while vehicles slowly circled in search of spaces. The removal of the barrier at the entrance, which forewarned and enabled you to take other options when the car park is full, is a disaster, she said. After 20 minutes, she had to abandon her husband in the car to avoid missing her appointment. He eventually parked and came in just as I was leaving. Given his memory loss and difficulty reading after radiotherapy, he should never have been put in that position, she said. A second visit earlier this month ended with Miss McGinn receiving a fine after she parked on a grass verge close to the hospital while rushing to a time-sensitive procedure to remove a suspicious lesion. She said there were no signs prohibiting parking on the grass and visible tire marks suggested others had parked there previously. "I saw signs inside saying, 'Late arrival equals no treatment.' So having made it by the skin of my teeth, I breathed a sigh of relief." But she said she was left shaken after the procedure and described the parking fine as the final straw. She added that she had allowed an extra 40 minutes for parking, but was still caught out by traffic, roadworks and what she described as a system not fit for purpose. Following a post on social media, she said others had shared similar experiences, including a woman who received a penalty after taking her wheelchair-using brother to an appointment. Miss McGinn has lodged a formal challenge against the parking fine and said she already received what she described as a brush-off from the hospital's patient advice and liaison service. She is now calling on APCOA, the company which runs the car park, and the hospital to reinstate parking barriers or introduce clearer warnings when car parks are full. She said both organisations have a duty to make reasonable adjustments for vulnerable patients. Alison Stace, the hospital's chief delivery officer, said, "We are aware that at peak times our public car parks can become very busy and apologise for any inconvenience this might cause to our patients. To address this, we are working with the car park operators to improve our signage in line with the feedback we have received and to make it clearer where our more vulnerable visitors can park while highlighting areas not suitable for parking. In the meantime, we would ask our visitors to follow existing signage and use both public car parks at peak times," she said. APCOA Parking has been contacted for comment.
Grapevine Extra this week features the February programme for Vision Norfolk, plus Alison and Andrew recalling the details of the year when East Anglia was the region where the weather and sea were our worst enemy. Before all that, and the second part of the main news, some news in brief.
A number of untaxed cars have been clamped in the town. The DVLA clamped numerous untaxed cars in the Nelson ward of Great Yarmouth on Tuesday. The DVLA clamps cars primarily to ensure that vehicles on the road have been properly taxed and insured. A Facebook post from Great Yarmouth and Nelson Ward Labour councillors said, "Untaxed vehicles were being clamped by the DVLA in Nelson Ward yesterday. To release your car, there is a £100 fee to be paid within 24 hours, otherwise it may increase, or there is the possibility of your car being impounded, incurring further costs. Make sure you're up to date with your road tax, otherwise this could happen to you." Zaxx, a burger chain with branches in Barrack Street and Mousehold Heath in Norwich, as well as Great Yarmouth and Poringland, has introduced the Warm and Fuzzies. Customers can nominate a good Samaritan who has done something kind, thoughtful or generous that made others feel warm and fuzzy, and they can have a chance of winning a free meal. The monthly promotion aims to celebrate everyday acts of kindness. Chris Carr, co-owner of Zaxx, said, "For 50 years, the people of Norfolk have supported us, shared meals with us, made memories with us, and we couldn't let that pass without saying a very heartfelt thank you. The Warm and Fuzzies is for anyone and everyone. It might be a friend, a colleague, or someone who just made you feel good when it was needed most. A winner will be selected each month and treated to a meal at Zaxx with a guest of their choice." The branch in Mousehold Heath was recently listed as one of the UK's top 100 restaurants used by the users of the Open Table reservation app. A man is to undergo an assessment for dangerousness after he admitted stabbing another man in the street. Gedrius Gobus has been charged with wounding with intent following a stabbing in Paget Road, Great Yarmouth. The 26-year-old appeared at Norwich Crown Court on Monday, January the 26th, when he pleaded guilty to the offence, which happened on December the 6th last year. Judge David Pugh adjourned sentencing to March the 25th to allow a report assessing dangerousness to be carried out. Gobus of Norwich Road, Dereham, was remanded in custody until sentencing. And a Wetherspoon pub has been awarded a top hygiene rating. The Trollcart, located on Regent Road in Yarmouth, received a 5-star rating in the Borough Council's Scores on the Doors programme. Daniel Bullion, the pub manager, said, "We're delighted that we have gained a top rating and I'm sure our customers will welcome the news too. Standards of hygiene at the pub are of paramount importance and all the staff have worked hard to achieve this."
Repairs are being carried out on a town water main after a leak was discovered. Essex and Suffolk Water said it was alerted to a leak on Brasenose Avenue in Galston last week and sent a technician to the scene to assess the issue. A spokesperson for the company said the leak was small, but due to its location, repairs needed to be carefully planned to ensure the work could be carried out safely. The spokesperson said, "Crews are now currently on site, and the repairs took place on January the 27th. We would like to thank customers for their patience and apologise for any inconvenience. Motorists were advised to allow extra time for journeys while work continues." Norfolk has been named as one of the most beautiful counties in England. The Daily Express has compiled a guide to the prettiest places across the country by looking at the number of national parks and scenic spots in each county. Norfolk made the grade at number 7 on the list. Between its quaint seaside towns and its stunning stretches of sandy beaches, Norfolk is an often overlooked county in England, the author said. It has plenty of stunning natural beauty spots, including Scolt Head Island and Holcombe National Nature Reserve. Norfolk ranked higher than Kent, Northumberland, Dorset and Derbyshire. However, Gloucestershire, Devon and North Yorkshire all finished above Norfolk in the rankings. Beaches in Norfolk are routinely named among the best in the country and even in Europe. North Norfolk was also recently named among the best places to see the Northern Lights. Two teenagers have been charged following the death of a 15-year-old girl who had taken MDMA. Emergency services were called to Hopton at 12:30 a.m. on Saturday after reports that a girl had become unwell. She was taken by ambulance to the James Paget Hospital in Galston, but died a short time later. Following police inquiries, two 18-year-olds were arrested on Monday. Kean Lockett of King Street, Great Yarmouth, and Nathan Lafitte of No Fixed Address appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court on Wednesday, charged with supplying MDMA and being concerned in the supply of MDMA. Both have since been remanded in custody and will next appear before Norwich Crown Court on February the 25th. A spokeswoman for Norfolk Constabulary said a Home Office post-mortem examination will take place in due course. Police in Norfolk are hunting for Kevin Philip McMahon, aged 48, who failed to adhere to his licence conditions and was recalled to prison in November. Norfolk Constabulary has now revealed that Merseyside police think he may now be in the Great Yarmouth area. He is described as 5'9" tall, of medium build with brown eyes, receding black and grey hair and a beard. Anyone who believes they may have seen him is urged to contact Norfolk Constabulary.
OK, it's that time again, as we ask for Alison and Andrew to get you fully up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
A woman has won her battle over plans to transform an unattractive building into a Chinese restaurant, children's party venue and shop. Jane Zhang was embroiled in a dispute with Great Yarmouth Borough Council over her proposals for Vauxhall House, a two-storey commercial block off Acle New Road, near Great Yarmouth Railway Station. Her plans said the takeaway would be accessed from the existing entrance facing the station, while a shop would occupy the rest of the ground floor, and the first floor would host a party and function room. But Great Yarmouth Borough Council rejected her application over concerns for the appearance of that part of the town, soon to be the centre of a planned £20 million regeneration project. Planners said the building was utilitarian and unattractive, and that the limited changes outlined in Ms Zhang's application had failed to use the opportunity to transform the property. Ms Zhang then took her case to the Planning Inspectorate, which rules over planning disputes. The inspector has now allowed her appeal and granted planning permission for the proposed changes to the building. They said Vauxhall House was in a state of heavy disrepair and that the council accepted the building in its current condition detracts from the area. The appeal scheme would bring the existing building back into use, reintroducing activity and contributing to the vibrancy at this side of the station forecourt, the inspector said. The plans would also reinstate and reinstall windows. Given the condition of the existing building and the period for which it has been vacant, I consider these to be entirely positive attributes of the proposal, the inspector added. Vauxhall House is a standalone building located outside the railway station. Its last known occupier was a cash for clothes business. In January 2023, the government gave £20 million to Great Yarmouth Borough Council to redevelop North Quay and transform the area around the town's railway station.
Now, it's a ride so quintessential to the Golden Mile that it doesn't need a flashy name, being known only to us all as the roller coaster. The wooden roller coaster at Great Yarmouth Pleasure Beach was built in 1932, and the 459-foot by 98-foot ride has been taking thrill seekers for a spin ever since. It is one of only two scenic railways, a type of ride designed to give people a view of the picturesque landscapes, still in operation in the UK. At least it was until Tuesday, when Dreamland Margate in Kent announced that its own scenic railway would, quote, take well-earned retirement from operation as a ride. Dreamland Margate said an extensive process of consultations and inspections was carried out on the wooden ride, but it was concluded that after 100 plus years, the ride had come to the end of its current life. So this means that our very own Grade 2 listed ride on Great Yarmouth Seafront is officially the last scenic railway in the country. The roller coaster is unique due to a brakeman having to ride alongside thrill seekers to control its speed and bring the roller coaster to a halt. And of course, it achieved fame in 1982 when it featured in Madness's music video for the single House of Fun. Well done, the roller coaster. Long live it, too.
And more local traditions. From jellied eels to prawns and chroma crab and mussels, a Norfolk stall has been dishing up seafood delights for decades in the town. Nichols Seafood, a family-run seafood business, has said it is a big achievement to mark 80 years of trading in Great Yarmouth. It has been trading and selling its legendary jellied eels and seafood delights at Great Yarmouth Market since 1946. Christine Nichols George has been the friendly face welcoming customers at the stall for 45 years and is the third generation of her family to run it. She said, "It's nice to keep the family tradition going. That's a big achievement, just how we have grown from strength to strength, from a small stall selling jellied eels to a big stall selling all sorts of fish. I think my dad and granddad would be proud of us." Christine's grandfather, William Nichols, set up the business in 1946, selling jellied eels in a barrow after leaving the armed forces. Christine took over the reins when her father Trevor retired and has been running the business with her husband Darren and her daughter Shakira. She first helped out when she was 13 and has been working at the stall for 45 years, transforming the business from a previously seasonal market into a six-day-a-week operation. She said, "It is nice to think we have come this far. I do like market life and I'm proud to be called a market trader. We meet different people and have them just come up for a chat. It's lovely. People know you. We go out for the day and people speak to us." From its birth with jellied eels, the stall has diversified and now sells a wide array of seafood delights, including cockles, prawns, mussels and chroma crab. The business sources the majority of its produce from fishermen on the Norfolk coast and gets its prized eels from London. The Facebook page of the business has garnered quite a cult following over the years, where Christine can be seen regularly exhibiting the stall's special seafood platters. "It's fun," she said. "I do love it. Hopefully my daughter Shakira will take over, but I have no plans to retire yet. I look to get to 100 years here. It's just hard work. I think we do well because we are the faces here. People like the personal touch."
A national mobile vehicle repair service has opened a new franchise in Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft. Revive offers repairs for minor paint scratches, bumper scuffs, dents and damaged alloy wheels at a time and place convenient to customers. Operating through a nationwide franchise network, it works with car dealerships, fleet and leasing companies, insurance brands and the general public. Liz Pither, owner of Revive's new Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft franchise, said, "Our aim is to establish Revive as the number one vehicle bodywork repairer in the area. Revive has the UK's largest accredited network of repairers, and the brand name is synonymous with outstanding quality and the highest levels of customer service. There has been a significant increase in demand for top quality paintwork repairs throughout Norfolk, and we're going to meet that need by delivering a fast, efficient and professional service. We are already working with some of the prestigious local dealerships and we look forward to expanding our operations through Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft as news of our arrival spreads."
A businessman who has lost two brothers and two close friends in a devastating industrial accident has spoken out about his 15-year journey to finding peace. Matthew Hazelton was 32 when his brothers Daniel, aged 30, and Thomas, aged 26, were killed alongside friends Peter Johnson, 42, and Adam Taylor, 28, after a steel pressure testing cage collapsed at Claxton Engineering in Great Yarmouth on January the 15th, 2011. Now 47, Mr. Hazelton marked the anniversary of the tragedy by taking to the stage at an event he organised with his partner Lucy Smith. Speaking to an audience of more than 200 people from the building and construction sector, along with family and friends, he described the years following the accident as a roller coaster of grief, financial loss and mental breakdown. He said the tragedy had cost him thousands of pounds and left him struggling to cope, but that he finally feels mentally stronger than at any point since the accident. He said, "I'm incredibly lucky in life now, but it's taken me 15 years to feel really happy in myself again." Mr. Hazelton, who lives in Suffolk, has since linked up with Proud to Be Safe, an organisation that provides motivational speakers on safety, health and well-being in the workplace. Through public speaking, he shares his experiences with businesses across the UK and Europe. The event, Suffolk Safety Day, took place at Portman Road in Ipswich on the anniversary of the accident. He explained why he chose that date for the event, saying, "I wanted it to be a lasting legacy for these guys, to have a mark on these industries." He spoke candidly about the immediate aftermath of the accident, including the trauma of making phone calls to loved ones, the collapse of his business finances, and the many low points that followed. He said, "Had I not fallen into public speaking and found a way to clear my head, I really don't think I'd have the life of privilege that I have now. 15 years ago, I was standing on site, waiting to get down to see those boys. I hope nobody ever has to make those phone calls or receive them, because if you do, trust me, your life will never, ever be the same again." Following the accident, two construction firms were fined at the Old Bailey under the Health and Safety at Work Act. Charges against a third company, Haysgood Construction Limited, a groundworks firm founded by Mr. Hazelton, his brother Daniel and friend Neil Gooderham, were left to lie on file. The company was later dissolved in 2018. In the wake of the tragedy, the EDP's sister newspaper, the East Anglian Daily Times, established the Four Friends Memorial Fund, which raised £35,000 to support the families and funded a permanent memorial at the Cock Pub in Stanton, Suffolk.
Now, this next item is going to have quite a few little bit of facts and abbreviations and medical and chemical terms, so please bear with me. More than 11,000 people across the region are expected to be eligible for a weight loss jab on the NHS. A Freedom of Information request lodged with Norfolk and Waveney Integrated Care Board, the ICB, has revealed 11,600 people should meet the criteria for tirzepatide prescriptions over the next few years. Now, tirzepatide is better known by the brand name of Mounjaro, and it's a type of medication known as a GLP-1 agonist. The drug, typically taken as a once-weekly injection, reduces the user's appetite, which helps them to lose weight. It can also be used as a treatment for patients with type 2 diabetes. It was approved for use as a weight management medication in the UK in November 2023 and has been sold widely by private pharmacies since then. A new study by University College London has found that around 1.6 million UK adults took a weight loss medication between early 2024 and early 2025, and Mounjaro was amongst the most popular options. Other well-known GLP-1 antagonists include Wegovy and Ozempic, all names which I'm sure you've heard, which all contain a drug called semaglutide. In June 2025, the NHS began a phased rollout of Mounjaro prescriptions. To be eligible for Cohort 1 of the NHS rollout in England, patients must have a body mass index, commonly known as a BMI, of 40 or more, and be diagnosed with four or more qualifying weight-related conditions. These conditions include type 2 diabetes, heart disease, sleep apnea, high cholesterol, and high blood pressure. The criteria will change slightly as the rollout moves into phases 2 and 3 in 2026, 27 and 28. Last summer, the NHS Norfolk and Waveney ICB announced it would manage the delivery of tirzepatide prescriptions to local people via a community-based service. GPs and pharmacists who are ready and resourced to prescribe have been permitted to do so since June, but the community-based service intended to be responsible for most prescriptions was not earmarked to launch until late 2025. A spokeswoman for the ICB has now confirmed that this has been pushed back until March. Initially, we had anticipated that the new community-based service would be available to patients by the end of 2025, she explained. National structural changes in the ICBs and the formation of a new Norfolk and Suffolk ICB from April 2026 mean that we have needed some additional time to harmonise our commissioning plans with those in Suffolk. We are working hard to have the new community-based service for tirzepatide up and running by the end of March 2026.
A busker who entertained people in Norfolk with his Charlie Chaplin act has died, aged 58. Aunt Arnold, who lived in Great Yarmouth, was known for his statuesque tribute act on Regent Road in the town and in Norwich city centre. He was born in Essex and worked for almost 40 years performing a range of characters, including a robot clad in plastic armour and a living Charlie Chaplin statue. To achieve his eye-catching look, he used a special Kryolan metallic makeup. His homage to the silent movie star once even led to an appearance in a BBC drama about a serial killer. Mr. Arnold, who moved to Great Yarmouth in 2019, lived with epilepsy, which gave him minor seizures all day long and major ones every few weeks. He was left with the condition after suffering a serious head injury when he was hit by a car and dragged along the road at the age of 14. Having found a love of performing as a five-year-old, however, he said he was lucky to have his talent to fall back on. "I was left for dead for 4 hours and have an imprint of an exhaust pipe on my back," he told the Mercury in 2020. "The best way I can deal with it is to stay on a high all the time and keep smiling." People have been sharing their memories of Mr. Arnold. Angela Christine Baldwin said, "Anyone who has visited Great Yarmouth would have seen Ant's amazing act, usually performed on Regent Road. He truly was an amazing performer." Joe Ross said, "He's finally going to meet the great man himself, Charlie Chaplin. Rest in peace, my friend. It was great to meet you off and out of character and to get to know you as a person. Thanks for your entertainment and thanks for the chats. We will miss you this summer season."
A major retailer with 10 stores across Norfolk has officially appointed administrators. The original factory shop has 137 branches, including Attleborough, Cromer, Dereham, Downham Market, Galston, Harleston, Snettisham, Stalham, Wadden and Wyndham. And it's known for selling items such as clothes, accessories, shoes, books, electricals, toys and beauty products at a discounted rate. It entered administration earlier this month, and administrators from Interpath Advisory were officially appointed on Wednesday. Stores will continue to trade while insolvency experts explore options in a bid to keep it afloat. Rick Harrison, Managing Director at Interpath and Joint Administrator, said, "The original factory shop has long been a cornerstone of local high streets up and down the country. Unfortunately, however, trading challenges have impacted the business such that the company had to be placed into administration. Over the coming weeks, we'll be working closely with the original factory shop's dedicated team of employees as we endeavour to operate all stores as a going concern while we assess options for the business. The company currently employs 1,180 members of staff."
Drug traffickers used the Royal Mail to send huge quantities of cocaine from Blackpool to Galston, from where it was sold on to addicts. The operation saw a Norfolk gang send cash payments of almost £500,000 to another gang in the northwest, which arranged for bulk packages of cocaine to be posted back. The Norfolk gang initially sent the cash, in amounts of £25,000, in the post before switching to couriers. In return, up to 19 kilos of cocaine came into the county from Blackpool. Details of the operation emerged at Norwich Crown Court, where some of those involved at the Blackpool end were sentenced. The court heard Sam Roth, 32, collected and counted the cash, helped on one occasion by partner Emma Dickinson, aged 30, while Jason Campbell, a former soldier, helped package the drugs to be sent to Norfolk. The hearing was told that police became aware of the operation in 2022 after officers seized a phone as part of a separate drugs investigation. On the device, they found communications between the Blackpool and Norfolk gangs. Officers then became aware of packages being sent from Norfolk to Roth's address in Blackpool. Roth, Campbell and Dickinson were arrested by police in Blackpool. Will Carter, prosecuting, said their operation dealt in kilos of cocaine, for which many hundreds of thousands were paid to them. The court heard Louis Boyle was a key player in the Norfolk gang, sending the cash to Blackpool in return for the cocaine. The 35-year-old of Howard's Way, Bradwell, ran an online network called Coke Kings that he used to supply customers across the UK. The former offshore worker was arrested in Norfolk and went on to admit conspiring to supply a Class A drug and being concerned in the supply of ecstasy, cannabis and cocaine. He was jailed for a total of 16 years in May 2024. The amount of cash sent from Norfolk to Blackpool between August and October 2022 is thought to have been in the region of £425,000. Earlier this month, Roth, from Blackpool, appeared at court in Norwich, having admitted being concerned in the supply of cocaine. Campbell, also from Blackpool, admitted being concerned in supplying cocaine to another. He also admitted being involved in the supply of a Class B drug, ketamine. Appearing alongside Roth and Campbell, who appeared at court using crutches, was Dickinson, also from Blackpool. He also appeared in the dock having admitted transferring criminal property, namely £25,000. Judge David Pugh jailed Roth for 9 years, telling him, "The whole idea of setting up to supply drugs is to make money, and Mr. Roth was entrusted with a significant amount of cash." Sentencing Campbell to 54 months, he said the defendant clearly had an operational function in the chain and must have had an awareness and understanding of the scale of the operation. The judge accepted that Dickinson's involvement was on one occasion. He was given a 12-month community order with 140 hours of unpaid work and 5 days rehabilitation activity requirement. Martin McCarthy for Roth said the defendant had been recruited to play a specific role at what was a weak point in his life, but had only been participating for 4 months. He was never involved in drugs directly and only ever received sums of cash, said Mr. McCarthy. Richard Butcher for Campbell said he had served in Iraq and Afghanistan and that the trauma he suffered was part of the reason he turned to drugs in the first place. John Lucas, on behalf of Dickinson, said she had performed a limited function in the enterprise.
A garage in Galston has ceased trading due to unforeseen circumstances and put all its equipment up for sale. JLM Auto Services, which ran a car repair shop on Leicester Road, has now closed to trade. In a Facebook post, the business said, "We are very sorry to be having to make this post, but due to unforeseen circumstances, JLM Auto Services will cease trading. This has been a very tough decision for us to make. We would like to thank all of our customers for their continued support throughout the years. Equipment up for sale is listed on the Facebook profile page and includes transmission jacks, cabinets, sofas, desks and ladders."
Some post boxes across Norfolk are to remain out of action for at least the next few months, as a major upgrade project is completed in Gloucestershire. A number of the Royal Mail's classic red boxes have been wrapped up in black bin bags, while they're transformed into post boxes of the future. The new version of the post box will allow customers to send and return parcels up to the size of a shoebox. But despite being unusable since late August, post boxes earmarked for a futuristic upgrade will remain sealed for at least the next few months, it has emerged. Each post box can take several weeks to upgrade, as it must be measured before having the door taken off and sent to an engineering centre in Gloucester to be retrofitted. The new models boast a solar-powered barcode scanner that opens a drop-down drawer to put parcels that would not fit through the traditional post box slot, which will remain in place. These futuristic new features then have to be couriered almost 200 miles across the country before being installed in the streets of Norfolk. It marks the biggest change to post boxes in 175 years. But the so-called high-tech upgrade has some locals fearing they will be flung back into a postal stone age. Marilyn Northwood, aged 72, who lives in Drayton, said, "Technology has a habit of going wrong. Does this new technology mean they will do away with more post offices? If they do reduce the number of post boxes or post offices, elderly people who have disabilities like myself will find it harder to post their letters." A Royal Mail spokeswoman said, "The rollout began in late August and will continue for the next few months. The turnaround for the post boxes can be several weeks. The boxes are wrapped to protect them from the weather or vandalism during this time." The smart new features of the post box of the future mark the biggest change to the classic design since the 1850s. The first red post boxes in mainland Britain were erected in 1853, but a change was made in 1859 which standardised the colour of all postboxes as green. Complaints were received from people having difficulty finding these green, inconspicuous postboxes. A return to the more striking red was specified in 1874. It took 10 years to complete the programme of repainting.
Protesters angry that Norfolk County Council's elections have been postponed have told councillors they should quit to trigger by-elections. A group of Reform UK supporters gathered outside County Hall ahead of Tuesday's full council meeting, where they urged councillors to resign. The group of about 30 people waved union flags and held up placards with slogans such as "No Democracy, No Mandate" and "Our County, Our Choice" as they tried to persuade councillors to stand down. The protest came after the government announced legislation will be enacted to delay the scheduled May election for all 84 county councillors, along with Norwich City Council's election for a third of councillors at City Hall. While the City Council's Labour leader Mike Stonard had requested a delay, Kay Mason-Billig, leader of Conservative-run County Hall, did not explicitly do so. However, she has come under fire after her letters to local government secretary Steve Reid warned the county council would not have the capacity to deliver the elections, as well as devolution and local government reorganisation, which will see all of Norfolk's councils scrapped and replaced. She subsequently said the right decision had been made to postpone the elections, but had been accused of running scared of elections by political opponents. Nick Taylor, chairman of the Norwich branch of Reform UK, said the protest reflected how Norfolk was now one of the, quote, most undemocratic places in the country, given last year's elections, along with the mayoral election, had also been delayed. He said he'd written to all councillors saying they should stand down and trigger by-elections because they no longer had a mandate, with most having been elected in 2021 for a four-year term. He said the letter calls for them to resign their seat and hold a by-election for their divisions, because their mandate ran out in May 2025. Some of them could end up serving for 7 years, which is not acceptable. Independent councillor Simon Ring has already said he will resign his Freebridge Lynn division and will seek to win it again in a by-election.
A company that makes chips has been shut down after a rat infestation was discovered inside. Broadland Potatoes in Swanston's Road, Great Yarmouth, was forced to close following an unannounced routine food hygiene inspection on January the 21st. As well as the rodents, Great Yarmouth Borough Council also discovered a very poor standard of cleaning and stagnant water in the food preparation area. The company was then slapped with a hygiene emergency prohibition notice, forcing them to close immediately. On January the 23rd, the council attended a hearing at Norwich Magistrates Court, where an order was granted to ensure the food manufacturer remains shut until the council is satisfied that health standards are met and conditions have improved. The action was deemed to be essential due to the risk of illness the rats could have posed by contaminating the potatoes. Councillor Paul Wells, portfolio holder for Environment and Sustainability, Licensing and Waste at the Borough Council, said, "We have many excellent food companies that work hard to meet the required standards of food hygiene. However, there are unfortunately some occasions where some businesses fall short of those standards." A spokesman for the council added, "It is imperative that food companies maintain hygiene and food safety at all times. It should be right at the top of their priorities to ensure public safety. Officers will not hesitate to act quickly if they believe public health is at risk. Our environmental health team wants to work with businesses to maintain high standards, and our staff are on hand to provide guidance and advice so people can operate safely." Broadland Potatoes was contacted by the Mercury for comment.
Villagers are bidding to give their pub extra protection amid growing fears over the future of local drinking venues. Hemsby Parish Council has agreed to apply for the King's Head to be listed as an asset of community value, known as an ACV, a legal status designed to recognise buildings that play a vital role in village life. If successful, the move would not prevent the pub from being sold or redeveloped. but it would trigger a formal pause if the owners, the Wellington Pub Company, decided to put it on the market, giving villagers time to organise a bid or alternative plan. The King's Head on North Road is a traditional pub in a residential part of Hemsby, away from the bustle of the seafront. It was taken over in 2021 by experienced local operators Andrew and Sue Henney, who took on a 10-year lease. The pub was previously registered by the parish council, and the current ACV expires in February. Kerry Wilton, the Hemsby parish clerk, said it was identified in the Hemsby neighbourhood plan that it was an asset in the village that the participants of the village survey requested was protected from loss as a pub.
Well, that's all for the news this week, but there's more as we welcome you to Grapevine Extra. Alison and Andrew take us back to the time when East Anglia was the focus of the weather news, after we bring you the February programme of events for Vision Norfolk. Well, another month's nearly over, and so we have details of the February activities available for you from the Yarmouth Hub of Vision Norfolk. Things start on the 2nd with a hub quiz from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m, followed in the afternoon with the video gaming group from 2 until 4. Coffee mornings for the month are all between 10 a.m. and 12 noon, and are for Caister on Tuesday the 3rd and 17th, with the Yarmouth events on Wednesday the 4th, the 11th and the 25th, with Ormsby Consuming the Caffeine on Thursday the 5th, for which the staff have more info. Yoga is on the 4th and 11th from 12:30 until 1:30, whilst cribbage is the game on Thursday the 5th, the 12th, the 19th and the 26th, all from 10 until 12 noon. Pub Club meets on Thursday the 5th and the 19th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m, whilst on Friday the 6th, 13th and 20th it's weaving from 10 until 12, with Fishy Friday on the 6th from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Tuesday the 10th is bowling from 12 noon until 3 p.m, and you can stitch, knit and natter on Thursday the 12th from 1 p.m. until 3 p.m. On the 12th and 26th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m, you can book for Braille classes, available by appointment only. To Monday the 16th for the month's Burger and Bingo session from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. And a special note that the hub is closed all day on Wednesday the 18th. On to Friday the 20th and creative writing from 1 until 3 p.m. And on the following Monday the 23rd it's the pyrography workshop from 10 until 1. Finishing the month, Friday the 27th sees the Latch Hook group from 10 a.m. until 12 p.m. and the Audio Book Club from 1:30 until 3 p.m. Any queries with any of the events mentioned, contact Catherine on 01493 745 973 or email catherine.bond@visionnorfolk.org.uk, noting that Catherine is spelt with a C and Vision Norfolk is all one word. So that's catherine.bond@visionnorfolk.co.uk. Herb Alpert, and so what's new? Well, I've just told you that. Time then to take a step back in time with Alison and Andrew.
This Saturday, the 31st of January, will mark the 73rd anniversary of the catastrophic East Coast floods in 1953, when people all along the coast from Lincolnshire to Kent lost their lives. 9 people in Great Yarmouth died in the floods, and an estimated 3,500 were made homeless. The seawall in North Drive was destroyed, as was part of the Britannia Pier, whilst Goulston Promenade was badly damaged. Southtown and Cobham were badly affected due to breaches in the banks of Breydon Water. Paddle boats from the boating lake were used to rescue people from these areas. Many livestock were lost on the marshes, and apparently cattle that had been rescued were kept in the yard of the Two Bears Hotel. In Sea Pawling, 7 people died after the sea smashed through the dunes, creating a 100-metre gap. From the Wash to the Thames at Tilbury, there were power cuts, as electricity generators were flooded. The floods were the result of a fatal combination of storm-force northerly winds and an exceptionally high spring tide, which caused a tidal surge during the night when most people were asleep and therefore unaware of the impending danger. Although the 1953 floods stand out in people's memories, they were by no means the only ones to have caused severe damage to East Coast communities, which have been at risk of flooding for hundreds of years. On the 12th of February 1938, storm-force northwesterly gales, with gusts of up to 90 miles an hour, caused the river to flood in Southtown, and the sea flooded Marine Parade, breaking over a new wall at the marina. Many houses in the affected areas had a foot's depth of water in their front rooms, and the cellar at the Pier Hotel in Goulston was full of water. There were also severe floods in Southtown on the 7th of January 1905, and as long ago as 1557, a flood was recorded as being so serious that ships were rowed through the streets. The haven was deliberately blocked up to try to stop the sea coming in, with the result that a new harbour and river's mouth had to be created shortly afterwards. After the 1953 floods, improvements were made in many coastal areas in Norfolk. In Great Yarmouth, the existing flood walls were raised, but by the 1980s, areas of these walls had degraded or needed to be raised again. However, thanks to improvements in the seawall, a surge in 1993 didn't cause significant problems. Between 2019 and 2023, 40 flood defence walls were refurbished at various locations in the town, which should extend their lifespan by up to 30 years. As we know, flooding continues to be a risk in our area. On the 5th of December 2013, a coastal surge caused major damage at Hemsby, when 7 homes were lost to the sea. Storms continue to cause erosion along the coast, and since 2013, many more homes in Hemsby have been either lost or demolished because they were at risk, and even more recently, as we've just heard, it's happening. Coastal erosion and climate change continue to threaten our communities, but we shall have to hope that the horrors of the 1953 floods will never be replicated. Thank you.
staying with the 1953 floods, I've got some words in here from one of Grapevine's good old friends, the wonderful Mr. Malcolm Metcalfe, and from his autobiography called My Adventurous Life, there's a chapter in here which he says, 1953 was a memorable year for me. On the last day of January that year, I visited the Palace Cinema in Goulston High Street to see the classic western High Noon. On my way to the cinema, I became aware of how strong the wind had become, and it was bitterly cold. During the feature film, the wind could be heard howling, even from inside the cinema. Suddenly, the film stopped, the lights came on, and the manager jumped up on the stage and announced, "Ladies and gentlemen, all those people living in Cobham and Southtown area are advised to go home as there is a serious flooding of houses and roads." The packed cinema emptied quickly, except for myself and one or two others. I was determined to see the film out. But on leaving the cinema, I could feel the immense force of the wind. Dustbin lids and other debris were blowing along the high street. Tiles were falling off roofs, and it was almost impossible to walk. I made my way to nearby Baker Street, where a large crowd had gathered. The street was just like a river. I continued along Pier Plain, where I saw a fireman rescue people for some prefabs in nearby Bellsmarsh Road. I then made my way to the Floral Hall, now of course we know as the Ocean Rooms. Here I met a man who'd been dancing in the hall, and he was anxious to get his car away. With the help of others, we managed to get his car up Goulston Cliffs by way of a small path, and I often wonder how we achieved that feat. I returned home to wake my parents and told them to get dressed and come and see the terrible floods. I was 19 years old at the time and knew that I was witnessing an historic event. My brother Trevor and sister Pamela were still not in when we returned home at about 1:30 a.m. In fact, they didn't return all night. Trevor spent the night sleeping on a billiard table in a Yarmouth youth club, and Pamela stayed the night with a friend, also in Yarmouth. We were very worried until we saw them. They had been unable to contact us as all the telephones appeared to have been cut off. In the same week, volunteers were asked to report to Yarmouth Town Hall to help people clean up their homes, and I volunteered. I'll never forget walking from the Town Hall to Cobham armed with mops and buckets. I found my way to Isaac's Road, knocked on a door and asked the family if I could give them a hand. My offer was too much for the family, who broke down and cried. Their kitchen was in a terrible state. Around 2 feet of muddy water mixed with an assortment of tea, rice, peas and sugar, all floating in a soggy mess. I spent over 4 hours working with them. Things looked and felt better after a fire was lit in the living room, but it was many, many weeks before these houses dried out completely. So those are Malcolm's words. And I'm sure there'll be many of you who've got memories of those 53 floods and the tumult that followed, really. Malcolm says many weeks for some of those houses to dry out. I think many in Cobham took years to dry out indeed. But if you have any memories of them, maybe you'd like to let us know and we might feature this again. Thank you very much for listening.
Well, that's just about it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2026 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week, your newsreaders will be Dusty, Margaret and Julie. So we look forward to your company for that. But in the meantime, we wish you all a good week and hope that you stay safe, well and warm. So from all your friends at Grapevine, it's bye for now.